Thank you, Kimberly. I'm happy to be able to speak to you today about this project. And first of all, I want to apologize to those of you. There's at least one that was in the audience this morning because I used the same template, so you'll see the same pictures. And I have no relationships to disclose. So as Kimberly said, this is about using cognitive interviews to improve service delivery tools. Don't worry if you don't know what cognitive interviews are. I didn't know what they were before I started this project either, and I'm going to explain it in a few minutes. And we used it in this case to simplify SDM screening. And again, I'll explain what SDM is in a few minutes as well. And the reason we did that is that when we introduced the SDM in a number of countries, there was the same protocol that we used in our small pilot studies. But as we were expanding and scaling up those programs, we have concerns about quality, and one of the ways to work on the quality is to simplify the protocol. So I'm going to first talk about the SDM, and then I'll talk about cognitive interviews, and then I'll go over some of the results that we have. So the SDM, or the standard DAZE method, is a fertility awareness-based method of family planning. It's based on the fact that there is a fertile window during a woman's cycle. And during this fertile window, a woman can become pregnant as a result of unprotected intercourse with varying degrees of likelihood. And that fertile window is a constant window when the cycle is within the range of 26 to 32 days. And what we've seen in service delivery is that this determining whether a menstrual cycle is between 26 and 32 days has become kind of an issue with some of the providers. It's become more complicated than it was meant to be. For example, the project that I'm most familiar with in Madagascar, because of this requirement of a cycle between 26 and 32 days, some of the providers were getting confused with this method and the calendar and combining the methods. And this that's what I saw in Madagascar, but it's also true in other countries. So this is the current protocol that we use when we're screening clients to see what the length of their menstrual cycles. So the first question is, when was the first day of your most recent period? If the woman knows the first day of her most recent period, the provider then asks, when do you expect your next period? If the client does not remember these dates, then simple questions can be help her determine if her cycles are within range. We would ask, do your periods usually come when you expect them? And if the answer is yes, the provider then asks, do your periods usually come about a month apart? Questions 2 and 4, about when do you expect your next period and do they usually come about a month apart, we expect that the woman will be able to answer these questions based on their memory of their previous experience. Now, this is a standard set of questions that are applied across all countries, but as you can imagine, when these are translated and used in different cultures, then some of the meaning changes slightly. So as I've talked a little bit about this, some of the challenges with the current protocol is that providers are having difficulty obtaining the exact information to calculate their cycle lengths. And it's perceived as time-consuming both during their counseling sessions and during their training sessions, taking away some of the training time from other elements of SDM. So some of the possible solutions that we came up with is to eliminate the calculation of the cycle length, and the way we would do that is just to ask if the periods come when expected and about once a month. But before we could simplify the protocol, we wanted to see if we would reduce sensitivity. So in this case, the sensitivity is the ability to accurately predict whether an individual woman's cycles will be within the 26 to 32 day range. So for this study, we used a combined method. We applied the screening questions to 500 women in Ecuador and India. For 5% of those respondents, we did the cognitive interviews. And for all 500 women, we did monthly follow-up of all of, for 12 cycles to determine their cycle length. For this presentation, I'm just focusing on the cognitive interviews portion. So I learned about cognitive interviewing mostly from a how-to guide that was developed by Gordon Willis from the Research Triangle Institute, and this is where I pulled this information from. So cognitive interviewing was developed in the 1980s, and this was to reduce response errors on survey questionnaires. So it focuses on the process that respondents use when they're trying to respond to questions on these surveys. It focuses on their comprehension, their ability to retrieve information from their memory, how they decide to answer, and how they respond. There's two methods that are used. One is think-aloud interviewing. This is when the respondent is asked to say out loud what they were thinking as they were trying to answer their question. The other method is verbal probing, and that second method is what we used in our study. So there are a number of different verbal probes that can be used. One of them is the comprehension interpretation probe. So we would use a question such as, what does the term period mean to you? Another type of probe is paraphrasing. Can you repeat the question in your own words? Next probe is confidence judgment. So you would ask a question such as, how sure are you that your period would come on that date? A recall probe is, how do you remember that that was the first day of your last menstrual period? A specific probe, why do you think that your periods come about a month apart? And general probes, such as how did you arrive at that answer? Was it easy or hard to answer? So I'm going to go over each of our questions from the protocol, the probes we used, and then the results. So the first protocol question was, do your periods usually come when you expect them? And the probes we used were, what do you think they were asking there? How did you arrive at your answer? Was that easy or hard to answer? What does the term period mean to you? And how sure are you that they do or they do not come when you expect? These are some of the things that we saw about this question. It's a lot more difficult for women to predict the future than it is to talk about the past. And many women characterize themselves as irregular if their period did not come on the exact same date every month. And this question was interpreted in various ways. For example, there were some women who would say, yes, it comes when I expect it, because I expect it when I have cramping or spotting or some other symptoms of the menstrual period. The next protocol question was, do your periods usually come about a month apart? And the probes we used for each of our protocol questions were similar. The only thing that changed in this case was we asked, what does the term usually mean to you? Some of the things that we saw are that some respondents hesitated because their periods came twice within the same month. However, they saw that we used the word about, so they answered correctly. Also, as I was saying earlier, this question, due to the translation in Hindi, the question was misinterpreted, and many respondents responded with the calculation of their cycle length. The next question was, on what day did your last menstrual period begin? And we learned that this is a typical question in family planning service delivery, and providers and clients both are used to asking and answering it. Many women will give the last day of their bleeding instead of the date that it started, but providers are used to following it up with the question, was this the date bleeding started or the day it stopped? In addition, even though women do not always remember the exact date, they find it easier to correlate it with other events in their life. Like they might use a festival that was close to that day or a market day or whatnot. The next question was, when do you expect your next period to begin? And we used all of the same probes, except now we ask, what does the term expect mean to you? And again, in this question also, it was difficult to predict the future rather than think retrospectively. And if a cycle length is different from month to month, even if it's by a day or 2 days, then the woman hesitated in their answer and didn't know exactly how to answer. Some also responded with a range of dates. So these are some general observations that we made based on all of our cognitive interviews. First of all, lower literacy women had more difficulty responding than the higher lit woman. This was especially for the questions, does your period usually come when you expect it, and do your periods usually come about a month apart? However, with some additional probing and help from the interviewer, they were able to respond. Also, understanding what cycle regularity is different from person to person. So it would be more helpful to have more than one question to ask about it. And this is a little bit intuitive, but women who track their cycles have an easier time responding to the question. We also noticed that after we did the cognitive interviews for a while, we also did some where we would observe a provider counseling session and then apply the cognitive interviews after the provider counseling session, and this provided a lot of more interesting information for us. So we saw that the cognitive interview process confirmed the current SDM screening protocol needs simplification. Also, we saw that the questions must be tested in each local language to ensure that it's understood correctly in that language. And we also saw that cognitive interviews have a place, not just in validation of survey instruments, but also in the improvement of service delivery tools. Thank you very much.
Does anyone have any questions for Sujata regarding the cognitive survey interview technique or any aspect of the presentation? Thank you, Sujata. You know, when Sujata was talking, it made me think about how often we may misinterpret what someone is asking us or what we're asking a client or a community member regarding whatever health issue we're discussing with that individual. And just the thought of using this technique with these cognitive interviews so often we use job aids in clinics and to make sure that people ask a couple of key questions or do a couple of things. And it may be a strategy that we could use to further test the appropriateness not only of the question, but to help train the providers to use those probes that we would need to use, for example, in her example about menstrual cycle, you know, when was the first day of your last period? That may mean different things to different people, and how we ask that question and how we probe to make sure that we're getting the answer that we expect. So thank you very much, Sujata. I'd just like to open up to all of you, and as we think of the presentations that we heard from our three presenters, are there any questions that come to mind or any more information that you would like or an experience that you would like to share with all of us? Or the presenters, anything that in hearing each other's talks that you'd like to share with the audience? I'll ask a question. I'm just curious, in terms of thinking of your presentations and the work that you've done, thinking of any challenges or lessons learned that might be helpful for those of us who would like to apply some of the techniques that you used to another situation. So is there anything that you might be able to share with us in terms of lessons learned or, you know, future application of what you talked about? Anybody? Yes? Uh-huh.
For me, the materials we use in our programs, it should bear some ownership, mm-hmm. because it helps a lot. Mm-hmm. It engages them and drives them to participate meaningfully with the programs. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In terms of that community involvement and that personal ownership, in not only the materials development, but in the actual experience and educational experience that they have.
Right.
Yes. And any other comments or thoughts?
I probably should also share that through the course of a year, we're also contracted by the Office of Family Planning to do monitoring visits and monitoring calls to assess linguistic and cultural competency. And we actually designed a tool that we use we introduce ourselves as someone who's calling on behalf of the Office of Family Planning, and we ask very specific questions to them in terms of the client population they serve, the demographics of their staff, you know, the ability to get a sense of their ability to serve the clients they're serving. And in this process, we take opportunities to let them know what resources are available. And we've often talked about this toolkit. Mm-hmm. And providers, by and large, are, and we do a random sampling. So we just pick a county and just select a provider. And out of 2,000, that's pretty random mm-hmm. that we do. And most of them are willing to answer the questions. I mean, they are hesitant, wondering if there's going to be ramifications. But it's interesting that most providers are really open to the information. And knowing that there's something available, knowing that there's a number to call in case they need any additional information or help, is actually what makes them take the next step. So they're welcoming whether or not they implement it and to what extent, you know, hard to say. But we also find out that many providers are challenged by the client population they're serving. They want to do good, but they do, you know, do feel challenged.
Anything
mm-hmm.
suggested you wanted to add?
Well, you asked about challenges, and I think one of the biggest challenges for this study was the training of the interviewers. The cognitive is a lot like most qualitative studies, where it takes a certain type of interviewing style. And so it took a lot of time to get our interviewers going with this. Also, I didn't really talk about it much in this, but we realized that providers actually do have a lot of knowledge about what questions are working and what's not working, and mm-hmm. Their clients' understanding of the questions. So we also added an element of provider focus groups and interviews that were helpful.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering that in this process, in the cognitive interview, what you have done, you see that there are varied opinions. They really do not know, actually do not know when the period, next period is coming. So isn't it difficult to maintain the fertility period properly? And it will ultimately affect the program. Success rate will be low.
There are a number of things that I didn't cover in here. First of all, when we looked at a large database of women, about 75% of women have cycles that are within the range of 26 to 32. And with the new protocol that we're going to start piloting soon, we're just going to ask, do your periods come about a month apart? And then on the cycle beads, there is a way where you can self-monitor your cycle length. I'm sorry, I don't have any tools or pictures with me, but there's a dark brown bead. And if your period comes before that dark brown bead, oh, great. But if you're, if your period comes before this dark brown bead or after this, then the woman would know that her cycle is too short or too long to use the method. So we're going to focus our counseling more on the use of the self-monitoring.
And so with that, they would know each cycle if they were out of range.
But still, it also relates on woman empowerment, because decisions she alone cannot make, that this is my fertility time, and you know, you cannot have intercourse at that period and those things. This depends on both the husband and wife's decision. And in a country like Bangladesh, women's empowerment will be a very important issue, and I'm sure like many African countries.
Yeah, clearly, this is a method that requires both partners to agree and want to use that method in order to be successful. Yes, definitely. Anyone else from the audience? And then my last question would be, in terms of future research in the area that you're working, any suggestions that you would have that where you would like to learn more in that new topic?
Well, just what I answered in terms of the question, really would like to evaluate the use of the tool with providers who have actually taken it through the full spectrum in terms of creating a strategic plan mm-hmm. and see, get a sense from them. Because I always wordsmith questionnaires to death, you know. And to some extent that's good, but at some point you gotta let them go, right? And there are questions. We've worked at these questions so much to make sure that the response is going to be exactly what we wanted, that they everyone understood the question the same way. But I wouldn't be surprised that there's questions that people are answering differently. But the other thing is the importance of evaluating all staff. And usually questionnaires like this are used within the administration. Like maybe the health educator uses it as their little assessment. But I think the beauty of this one is that if you do it with all staff, you get a more realistic picture of the clientele you're serving and how you're serving.
Anyone else?
Well, the objectives for our session, I think we've clearly met, were to assess the importance of developing culturally appropriate educational materials for non-literate adolescents, discuss the development process of the Family Pack Linguistic and Cultural Competency Toolkit, and describe the simplification process for the SDM, the Standardized Method Screening Tool, and describe how train. I was going to read the one that we didn't have, so that one we didn't cover. In closing, I want to thank our panel, our distinguished speakers, Dr. Hrishikesh Sarkar and Veronica Sleh Murillo and Sujata Naik for their sharing their research, their experiences, and their insight with us today. In terms of closing comments, I keep thinking of the title of our session, Bridging Linguistic and Cultural Gaps, and I think of a bridge. And I think our speakers so clearly shared that the goal is not to bring the community and clients across that bridge to our, you know, medical model or our way of doing things in current service delivery, but instead to increase awareness among educators, counselors, all levels of staff, using things like a toolkit and training organization-wide, as well as designing innovative materials using photo storyboards and simple language materials, as well as simple tools that resonate, that are developed in collaboration with the population, the intended population that we're serving, so that ownership is truly there. And then we can better understand what the need is, the possible strategies for us to get to the other side of that bridge to provide quality healthcare and counseling services for the population that we're serving. And in closing, did any of you see the Sarah Jones performance that was on Monday night? It was she is a performer who's won Tony Awards and is a playwright, and she did a series of skits on these little vignettes on health disparities in the United States, and she enacted people from various different ethnic groups and different genders and also various ages, different immigration status and ability to pay for services in a humorous but also very somber tone. And she shared with us, she opened the session and closed it as a homeless person. And so she had a blanket around herself and she acted out this person. And she challenged us to look at her as a homeless person as though we were looking in a mirror to see ourselves. And that if we really see ourselves in the other person, that then we are more empathetic, we're more aware, we can understand better their experiences and create some of these programs and these innovative strategies that enable us to really provide quality services for the entire population, for all the members of our community. So on that note, I want to thank you all for participating today and to joining us in our session. Again, thank you to our speakers, and we're done early, so you have more time to enjoy the sunshine in San Diego area. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to meet you. Yes. I'm going to go check out some of your materials. I was curious also to ask the different topics that were covered. There were 16, right?
16,
so
yeah, 16
what were some of the other topics?
Thank you.
All of them.
Yes.
Like early marriage, nutrition, HIV, my adolescence, changes, this type of thing, addiction.
Yes, very comprehensive.
And they come up with 12 stories that is covering the 16 topics.
And then the training of the educators, did they receive special training in how to, the technique of using these stories when they were working with the adolescents to order them?
Supervised. Actually, a plan along with partner.
Oh, okay.
A partner is there, who are technically sound. in line of providing training to the educators how to facilitate, how to.
So what are the next steps for the project? Will they be disseminating it further, or?
Yeah, we are disseminating within our plans area, but we are helping the others to see this and their thing, and hopefully they will be replicating in their areas. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much. Ma'am. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Have a wonderful visit in San Diego.
Thank you. Yeah.
Go check out the material before he packs them up. But, oh,
thank you.
You're welcome.
He always travels.
I don't know. I usually got them floating around somewhere. I had them for the fertility awareness presentation that I did earlier. So.
I really need to start
organized.
So Veronica, do you stay through Wednesday, or when you?
I stay through Wednesday, and then I'm going to go see my mother-in-law, who's in Riverside. I'm doing too well.
Oh,
I haven't been for a while.
Yeah.
She's got a little bit strong. And on to my sister-in-law.
Thank you.
just, she was like trying everything, and then it started to grow, and then it started to grow. So, like I say, she didn't go in and have her own rooms, and then they took her lymph nodes from all of her lymph nodes from one side, and then a couple from the other, they were all clean. So they told her that if you didn't have to do any radiation, if you let her pain, they'd come and caught it in time. You know, it was a pretty good chance. And you know, it's just, I mean, it just was really basically. So then they told her that she had to do her treatment plan as follow up every 4 months. Mm-hmm. So she goes in for a month and suspicious looking or something. And they do biopsy and it's cancer. So she's going in for 4 months after for surgery. She went in for sex surgery. And now he's dug in so deep that he's gotten very close to the bladder, you know? And so, sometimes, you know? And then we went in for the follow-up, and I said, you know, how long do you keep doing this? Or, you know what? And he goes, you know, Veronica, the question you need to ask is not, is your mother ever going to get this again? It's, when will be the next surgery? And I was like, no. So I talked to my mom and I said, you know, I told her all of your things. We're in the doctors. That's very good. You understand what I'm saying? He goes, yeah. Did you understand that? So we walk out to the pharmacy, pick up some blood pressure medication. And I said, she's going to say, and I don't know if it's a protective thing, you know, she just locked it.
It doesn't come in.
But you know, I said, I don't know what hope to give her. I don't know what to do. So then my brother says, well, I know a doctor. So he shares this, right? And then he shares all these other stories of people. Mm-hmm. And he knows this from his girlfriend. She's from, where's she from? By Spain, what's it called?
Portugal.
That was very Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And Portuguese community. He's not Portuguese. I think he's going to be like a...
some kind of social healer.
Yeah, and he's like from... either Russian or even with Cyrus sometimes, I don't know. But I thought he was Indian, but his name is Demir. Demir. And so anyway, I told him to talk to my mom. Mm-hmm. My mom's like fighting all the way down. I don't want him to tell me. I can't put gods in the front of me, can't have more than one god.
Oh
my
right.
God,
right.
And blah 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 blah. Uh-huh. You know, what if he tells me this or what if he tells wants you to believe in another religion, whatever. She's
right.
Thinking about all this stuff,
right?
So she ends up wanting to tell her brother she's not going in. She's sitting out in the lobby. And he comes out and he says, you're next. She says, I don't have it. He
really difficult for her, locking myself down. And seconds to think, I said, there's happiness, there's joy, there's love. God is there. Trust that He's there. Oh, she just like broke, like just let down her defenses. And He told her to turn around and look to my sister and said, your mother can't have another service. And this is no name, no information, no questions. Turns around, first, your mother can have another service. Did you hear me? Message goes, yeah. Goes, no, I want you to hear me. If she has another surgery, her fear will swell up. And she's going to go, do you want your mom to think her lost her something? No more surgeries for her. And so he started telling her, your problem started in your heel. You're just got this problem. Started in your heel. Heel your foot. Yeah. And it went up to your knee. And then it went up to your head. Yeah. So that's where it is with your heart. And it became. So on the way, it's done all this damage. Mm-hmm. And it goes through a circulation as well. She was, when she was young, she was like about 12 years old, and the federales were really crazy. They were stealing women and young girls and raping them, and my grandma got so scared. And so the nuns came to the town, and the women would give them their daughters so that they'd be safe, right? And so it took her to Mexico City, and all alone, and, you know.
Well, where did she live before that?
She was in Michoacán. So she said, you know, and he told her, it's like someone else. He knew.
Oh, amazing.
And you know, I did put her on a diet, but I kind of drafted the diet for her based on stuff I knew from when I worked at WIC. Mm-hmm. And my husband's a dad, so that's what classes were in too. Mm-hmm. And she's lost it. Well, in about a year.
Wow. She really stuck to it.
It just motivation, hope for something.
Well, and they connected. I mean, they
knew exactly how to connect. Right. No names, no nothing, you know? It was truly a connection. So we've been, you know, I've gone to see him, and I have a daughter who's having a period since last November. She's been wanting to go and work in a college, get regulated and stuff, and she's a volleyball player. And so she said, no, I gotta go see mom and sister's doctor. I gotta go see mom and sister's doctor. So So we went this summer, we went, and she, again, within seconds, we looked at her and said, no, say it sounds like closest to the very end. I mean, when you I thought it from that as a young adult. Eventually, took her to Kaiser. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I suggested a full suit of questions. Right. And it was exactly what their doctor said. Hormones and just everything. But Arvid told me that estrogen was the happiest hormone. It was a happy hormone. Mm-hmm. And she wanted me to walk.
Yeah.
Okay. Happy hormone, so that her mood
Wow. I hadn't heard that. That is so interesting.
Donna? You know what? I'm still fucking dumb. This place is far. I'm way out of the room.
I'm in the convention center on the top floor, away